morning. This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Back to your phone calls in a second, but joining us right now from the Mariners broadcast is Gary Hill. And Gary, boy, what started to look pretty bleak is starting to turn around now that the Mariners, with a revised lineup, can go down and get two victories over the Astros. You know, an Astros team that's missing some parts, but these were two huge victories.
Oh, no question about it. I mean, it is not an easy task to face Verlander and then back that up with, I mean, you look at the kind of year Cole's having. These are two guys that are in Cy Young Award contention in the American League. And what the Mariners did to put six earned runs on Verlander, which the most he's given up this year, to follow that up with four earned on Cole, that's tied for the most he's given up this year, 10 earned runs in two games against those guys. And it's only the second time this season that a team has beaten them on both ends of a back-to-back. It is really, really impressive. We've been talking about it on the broadcast. We've been seeing the signs of the offense coming to life. They went through a period where a lot of guys were cold at the same time. We've seen Haniger, Span, Cruz has been outstanding. You go down the list, and guys are really coming to life offensively. You look up now, and it's been six games where they've scored at least four runs in all six games. They're averaging about 5.5 during that span, batting .280 as a team, hitting for power, hitting in gaps. So it feels like it's really starting to come offensively. And I mean, the last two ball games against those two pitchers, now it's not going to be easy the next two as well because you face Morton and Keuchel, but the offense is looking very, very strong at this point.
No doubt. And then I think the key is it's a survival time until Robinson Cano comes back. And here it is on the 14th. He's back.
Yeah, no, it's right here. He's coming back against Oakland, which is obviously going to be a massive series, especially we'll see what happens the next couple of days. But no matter what happens the next couple of days, the Mariners are going to be right there next to Oakland. It's going to be close. And the Mariners, we've talked about it, they have destiny in their own hands, and they'll get a crack at Oakland in three games in Oakland with Robinson Cano in the lineup as well coming back. I mean, it's very exciting after these last couple ball games, no doubt about that.
Yeah, and no doubt. I mean, it was tough to watch and see the lack of hitting, you know, the 2.8 runs a game. But it looks like the one change to kind of spruce things up was putting Mitch Haniger up top and D. Gordon at 9.
Yeah, and Haniger has been on a roll, so it made a lot of sense to do that. Even when he struggled, he was still getting on base, and that, is, of course, is a valuable trait for anyone that hits at the top of the lineup. I think that a couple things came together at the same time. I think the lineup changed, but I think guys were starting to break out of it anyway, so it coincided with each other, I think. But, you know, sometimes just a change, sometimes something different can add a little bit of a spark as well. And you can't ask for much more from Haniger and Span, for that matter, at the top of the lineup the last two ball games. They've been on base constantly. Haniger is in that kind of role that we saw early in the season where he was just blistering the ball everywhere. I mean, he's smashing it all over the yard here in Houston against some of the best there is. And hopefully that's a sign of things to come as well. And I think the most frustrating part about that stretch offensively is you look at the lineup up and down, and you know it's a really talented group. We've seen them produce at a really high level this year. So certainly frustrated to see them go an extended period of time struggling offensively, but hopefully they've broken out of it.
Yeah, and I think that that's the encouraging part, that maybe they have broken out of it. I mean, because I have used the number, and maybe it's invalid, you know, pretty simple. When he was in the lineup, Robinson Cano, they scored 4.6 runs a game. When he was not, they scored 4. And then, of course, it got worse than that because of all the guys that had bad June or Julys and that. But, I mean, is he really worth half a run or 0.6 runs a game?
I think he's worth a ton of this lineup. Not only the production value, but just his presence in the middle of the lineup as well. What he does in terms of patience, taking pitches, adding stress pitches to a pitcher. There's outside of the production, which you can look at the numbers, and he produces, and he was producing at a very high level when he went out. There's other things that are added to the mix that aren't necessarily measured all the time. But yeah, I think he's incredibly valuable to the lineup. I give the Mariners a ton of credit for overcoming his loss. And they were playing a really high level for a long time, and it was kind of easy to overlook him not being in lineup because they're winning and playing so well. But there's no question he is incredibly valuable to this lineup, and he is going to be a welcomed addition back to the lineup. There's no doubt about that, especially at a time where it looks like they're breaking out of their funk. I mean, it what a great time to add him back.
Oh, no question. I mean, that's what the key is. And, where it was starting to get 2.5 games and, the A's were just winning and winning and winning. Now the A's have kind of leveled off a little bit. And, if they can stay at a game and a half or a half game and then head-to-head competition then starts to resolve this.
I agree. They've played well against Oakland this year, 6-3 against Oakland. Of course, they've been a different team as of late. The Mariners haven't seen them in this stretch, but I think it was inevitable that they were going to slow down. They were playing at a pace that's unsustainable for anyone, really. But they were playing at that pace for a long time. So give them all the credit in the world. And I'm of that mindset as well. Just stay close, and then take care of your business against them, and you should be in good shape. I mean, who knows what happens the rest of this road trip. The Mariners have a chance to be a game out. They have a chance to overtake Oakland. I mean, it is all there right in front of them because the swings are just so big when you play head-to-head against the team in front of you or the team right behind you, for that matter.
How much confidence could you see in the locker room after the game, the clubhouse, after these two wins?
I think they've always been confident. I think that it's hard to describe their confidence. I think they were starting to get frustrated as a group just in terms of the production hasn't been there, and they know they can. They know they're better than the way they've been playing. So I think there was some frustration there. I'm not sure if they lost any confidence because I think they know they're a good group. But I think it feels pretty great to do what they've done the last couple of ball games, especially against the caliber of pitchers they faced. I mean, anytime you roll up against Verlander and Morton and Keuchel and Cole, that is really, really tough four games. I looked at this four-game series as, hey, if you can get a split, that's really great, and it sets you up for some really good things in Oakland. They already have the split, and now I feel like they're playing with house money here. They have a chance to take a series. Again, it's not going to be easy. You face a couple more tough pitchers in their ballpark. It's not going to be easy, but they have a chance to do it, and they've set themselves up for what could be a great ending to this road trip.
No question. How do you kind of match up now the series coming up against the A's?
It's a great question. So the A's, they had a good bullpen to begin with. Trinan has been one of the best closers in baseball. He's right up there with Diaz with the kind of year he's having. And then they've just added, they're really deep right now in their bullpen. So this is a team you do not want to trail against late because they can put games away. Although yesterday they weren't able to put it away against the Angels. Their lineup, it's funny. They don't have a lot of huge names, but Chris Davis seemingly is hitting a home run every single ball game. The guy is incredible right now. And they just get enough production up and down the lineup. They have a lot of young players trying to figure out Chapman and Olsen having good seasons. I still think the starting pitching could end up costing the A's. They've overcome it thanks to guys like Edwin Jackson, who's come up and given them a huge lift. I mean, the guy he's been around forever. He's played on more teams than anyone, and here he is with a 3.00 ERA around that area and a handful of starts for Oakland. So they've had some guys come up because outside of Manaea, it really hasn't gone according to plan with their rotation. So I think that's an area where the Mariners in the head-to-head matchup have to take advantage in the early innings against that rotation, try and beat up the rotation, try and play from ahead, and that also plays obviously into the Mariners' strengths as well. Because you look at Colomé, what he's doing, he's on a long scoreless streak. Of course, we know what Edwin Diaz has done all season long. To me, against the A's, when these teams go head-to-head, the team that's up early is going to have a big, big advantage.
No question. So that's going to be good. What are you starting to like now out of the pitching staff?
Well, I've liked the rotation all season long. I think the rotation has surpassed expectations. I think what they have done is given you consistent innings all season long, and that's given Scott Servais an opportunity to kind of use his bullpen the way he has wanted to, because he hasn't had a lot of times where he's had a bunch of rough starts in a row or bullpen gets beat up. He really hasn't had to deal with that. The only times that he's had to deal with guys being down is playing so many close games in a row, and all your back end guys have pitched a lot, so he's had to sit some of those guys down. But I've loved the rotation. The back end of the bullpen has been superb, especially with Colomé, the way he's been dealing, and then Edwin Diaz. You gotta like that. I mean, Gonzalez and Paxton have been outstanding this season, and I think they'll continue to be that. So that's what I've liked that out of the pitching staff all season. Leak has been, when we saw it last night, you know, you look at his overall numbers, they don't jump out, but he had a 6.00 ERA in his first nine starts. Since then, his ERA is just a touch above three. That is a long stretch of really productive pitching at the top. And LeBlanc has been the same way. Again, the numbers don't blow you away, but he has given the Mariners chance to win just about every time he takes them out. He's given the Mariners quality innings every time out, and he's been really good. The rotation to me has been really, really impressive. And to me, it's really set the table for everything they've been able to do this year.
No question. Or what other bats are starting to heat up a little bit?
I think we're seeing it up and down. I think I've liked what I've seen from Kyle Seager in the month of August. We've seen him hit for power. We've seen him pull a couple of home runs along the way, some doubles along the way, which has been great. Nelson Cruz was kind of the first one to break out. I mean, he's been awesome. And when he is hitting for power, it's a game changer for this lineup. And we saw it last night, a couple of doubles, including the huge one with the bases loaded. Span has been outstanding consistently, especially as of late. Mitch Haniger has been on fire. We've seen Gene Segura pop out of it a little bit. So it's kind of the opposite of what we saw last month. In July, it just seemed like just about everyone was cold at the same time. Now we're kind of seeing a situation where we're seeing a lot of guys hot at once, and that bodes really well. Maben's contributed since he's been here as well, and Mike Zunino's hit for some pop. So you look up and down the lineup, and I think a lot of bats are coming around.
That sounds good. So we're going to be listening to the broadcast tonight. A chance to maybe, if you believe it, how about that? Not only if they can win this game, they'll be 6-6 against the Astros, a team that's pretty well dominated them for 3 years, but they'll win a series on the road.
Yeah, no doubt. It's funny, too, and this division is really strange. When you look at the numbers, the Astros and the A's, their home-road splits are so weird. The Astros, you would expect in that ballpark, is a dinky ballpark, left field that you can almost touch from home plate. Yet Houston has hit way more home runs on the road. Their production is a lot higher on the road. And the same is set for the A's. They've hit a ton more home runs on the road than they have at home. It's just really weird. Two teams in the division, two really good teams, have struggled more offensively at home than they have on the road. So we'll see if the Mariners can take advantage of that again. It's not going to be easy. Morton has been outstanding, an all-star. He's been great. But, yeah, think about it. A chance to win a series tonight, which would be pretty spectacular, especially after the struggles we saw against Toronto and Texas. That would be outstanding.
No question. Hey, Gary Hill, thanks for joining us.
Oh, anytime, John. Always fun to talk.
Okay, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Rich. Hey, Rich, how are you?
Hey, good morning, John.
Good morning.
Hey, you know, I love talking about Seahawks and Mariners, but nobody's talking about the Huskies this today. I mean, I want to know your opinion. I think it's going to be another astonishing, outstanding year.
I agree. I mean, what I like is that I think Chris Peterson has everything set up right. Yeah, there's questions at wide receiver. There's questions at defensive end. But I think he'll find a way to conquer it, because he always seems to find a way to conquer it.
Yeah, speaking of wide receivers, I saw a little article on Redmond Reporter on, I forget the guy's name, but he's number six. He's a little tiny guy, but they have really big hopes for him. And the picture I saw of him, he's built like a Mack truck, even though he's a tiny guy.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, what I like about Chris is that I think he identifies problems before they become problems. And what I mean by that is that, he'll go ahead and, try to find the right combinations of guys. I mean, he knew that they were going to lose a couple top wide receivers, Dante Pettis and Jonathan Ross. And so even though these guys aren't proven, I still think that they have a chance to really step up big time and be able to do some things.
I agree. I totally agree.
So no, it's like when you're looking at the Huskies, I mean, you're looking at a team that I think most people think that they should win the Pac-12. They have a chance to go into the championship series, particularly if they can beat Auburn. I mean, all that seems very positive.
Yes, and I'm so excited for that game.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be a true test.
Yes,
right there.
Okay, well, enjoy.
All right, thank you. Have a great day.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Francis in Tacoma. Hey, Francis.
Hey, Mr. Professor Clayton. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Just house hunting right now.
Okay.
I hope that goes well. I'll get to what I'm curious about. So I wasn't able to watch the Tennessee Titans Green Bay game last night, and I'm curious to know your opinion on how Luke Falk performed in the end of the third and beginning of, or in all the fourth, what he did well and what he needs to improve on. I'll take your comments off the air.
Yeah, okay, great. It's going to be a tough transition because, again, coming out of an air raid offense, I mean, he's never really been in a huddle. He's never really had to do all the things that you need as a quarterback. So that's going to be the challenge. So that that will take some time. But, he has a good arm. You can't expect anything from him the first year. I think that's just reality. That's just where it is. And so, you just try to wait things out, give him a chance to learn, and maybe within a year or so have him develop to be a backup. And if he can do that, then all should go well. So, overall, he's a talent. Again, he's a smart quarterback. I think he can be a good quarterback. It's just not going to be this year. And I think there's no way that they're going to rush him. That's just not going to happen. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Brian in Tacoma. Hey, Brian.
Hey, John, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm fantastic. So I'm looking at the NFC in general, and it looks like it's going to take at least 10 wins just to get the wild card this year, wouldn't you think?
I would agree, yeah. It's tougher in the NFC because when you think about it, I mean, 14 of the top 21 quarterbacks are all in the NFC. And so that leaves only two teams that don't have top-flight quarterbacks. And so, you really have to scramble to try to be able to be successful.
Do you think there's any chance anybody in the NFC West could get a wild card this year?
Yes, I think the Seahawks can. I don't think I think they can get to 10. Now, again, for that to happen, their defense has to be close to or better than it finished last year. And it has to have the ability to run the football where they can get, 100 yards a game out of their running backs. And if they can do that, then I think they can have a good point differential. And I think they have a chance to maybe, get some victories that, give them a chance to do well. So, I think that they still have 10. I think they have 10 win upside. I would lean more toward 9. But if things can go right, they can squeeze out that extra victory. They're talented. They still have talent on this team.
Yeah, but they'd have to sweep Arizona and the Niners to get to 10 wins.
I don't agree with that. I mean, no team in this division is going to go 5-1. I mean, 4-2 is what you can expect, and then you have to make up the 6 wins from the other 10 teams, and I think you can do it. I mean, remember, you could get too early. I mean, you've got Denver with a quarterback change to start the season, and then you've got Chicago on a Monday night game with Mitch Trubisky. So that gives you 2 right there. Then you pick up 4 the rest of the way, and that all can be done.
Well, and that's the same thing with the 49ers. They have some tough games, but they have, they have Minnesota early, which I think helps them.
Right.
And then they have Arizona, which isn't going to be too impressive, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
And then Denver, they have Denver early, too, so I think that really helps them a lot also.
Right.
So I just think it's going to be, I think we're all going to, everybody in the NFC West is going to beat each other up.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the case. I mean, Arizona is going to be probably a 6-win team, but still, they can sneak a game and still try to be able to beat you. So you don't want to get too overconfident about that. But
right, and hopefully for them, Bradford holds up for like 6 weeks, mm-hmm. and then the rookie can take over after getting his feet wet a little bit.
Right, exactly.
Because if he has to start right off the bat, he's going to be in trouble. But if he has 6 or 7 weeks to watch and learn, then I think he could be pretty amazing for them.
Right. No, I think you don't. You know, I look at a team right now that still can do some good things and, get some breaks. Because remember, the one thing that's in their corner is that their tougher games are at home. Now, I can say that. You can say the same about last year, and they went 4-4. But now I think there's a different focus. I think there's an offense that's going to be there. I mean, you just had nothing out of the offense for three quarters. Nothing. And so now I think they have a chance to have something.
All right.
Hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Taking your phone calls here as we get ready to, pretty much enjoy what's going to be kind of a fun football season. And what? Let's go to Joe in Federal Way. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Professor. How you doing?
I'm doing well.
Great. I just had a quick question for you. You know, I was kind of baffled about the Kaho situation at UW, that freshman linebacker that decided to take his talents to Alabama. I just wanted to know what your thoughts were on that.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it sounds like he sold him out a little bit because, you know, he said that, he had problems within the family and he wanted to get together with the family. And it's like, last I checked, I mean, Alabama is not as close to Seattle for Reno because, I mean, that's where the family was in Reno. So I think he sold him a bill of goods to get out of the deal. And so then, you know, he now, I think, goes down and shows you sometimes why Chris Peterson may not want to recruit five-star guys, you know, because I do think, I mean, I don't know, I can't say this as a fact, but you would lean to think that, he misled them. And that's not good. I mean, hey, if a five-star guy comes in and says, oh, I got family problems, I got to be with the family, great. But it's like, unless the family's moving to Alabama, I think that's kind of, I don't like that.
Yeah, I agree. I was wondering, you know, a lot of people on Facebook were talking about Tosh Lupoi, the old recruiter from UW, mm-hmm. who ended up at Alabama.
Right.
Do you think that there was any type of tampering with that linebacker coming in?
I've met Josh a couple times, and so I don't want to accuse him of that. So, I'll hold that for further review. But I think that something smells here, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, how can you say it doesn't?
Yeah, I know. And I know that he took a couple visits over there, but you know, it just kind of rubs me the wrong way. I wasn't feeling too hot after that. Kind of sad after he left us. But, you know, I think UW's going to do a good job this year. And I think Chris is on, got the program on the right track.
Agreed. And again, you don't know how much he was going to play. I mean, that's one thing that nobody really knew for sure. So, it's a loss. There's no doubt. It's more of a loss for the future than the present. I don't think it's going to play as much of a role in this year as it would. And it just gets Chris Peterson more motivation to go out and recruit somebody to come back and, fill that void.
Absolutely.
Which he's good at doing.
Thank you, Professor.
Hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
Taking your phone calls, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Justin in Linwood. Hey, Justin.
Hey, John. How's it going?
Doing great.
So I just had a question. It's like, how come the Seahawks haven't extended K.J. Wright? I know they just did Dwayne Brown, which was really needed for our mm-hmm. team. And, like, are they, like, grooming Shaquem to take over his spot and then not pay him, or... You know, I'm just sitting here, like, waiting in the news for us.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised, too. I mean, they'll get something done. I mean, you get Dwayne Brown done first. I mean, KJ, I think, showing good leadership, so he should be in a position to, get something around $10 million a year. They'd like to get Frank Clark. They'd like to get TJ Lockett. But sometimes it's just a matter of a waiting game to get these deals done. I know there's obviously the interest to get it done, but it's just not done yet. So just kind of stay tuned.
Yeah, like I said, do you think they're just like grooming Shaquem to take over?
I wouldn't necessarily say that, but if they can't get a deal, then I guess that is an option, and it certainly puts a little bit of two-way pressure on that. But the one thing that you don't want to have, and I think that they now see the value of it, is lose too much leadership. So I think there's a desire to get something done, but like anything else, sometimes it just takes time.
Yeah, that's true. So I was just curious, though, what
what are the odds that the Seahawks will actually go to the playoffs? Like, do you have that kind of information on that?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's like not being a bettor or anything like that. I can't give you odds. I mean, I think that they probably have a 40%, 50% chance of going. But I still think, you know, depending if that run game comes together, which I think it can, I think the defense, you know, has a chance to be respectable, not great. And if they can do that, I think they can get to 10 wins. And then you start to see where it is on all the wild card variations and all the stuff that makes it tough to figure out where it's going to go, but I think that they do have a chance.
And real quick, who do you think is going to be the breakout rookie this year on our team?
The breakout rookie, well, I mean, Michael Dixon, I think, right now has a chance to show he, as the punter, has just been incredible. I mean, the 50-yard punts that he averaged, I think you put him at the number one hole. And now what you start to look at is that, okay, you know, Rasheem Green has a great opportunity to play because, again, that defensive end position right now is in question with Deion Jordan. I don't know if he's going to be ready for the start of the regular season, so I put him in the number two hole. Then, you know, Trey Flowers may or may not get a chance to play early, but I think Will Disley would be that next guy. And then, of course, Rashad Penny is going to be the backup running back and I think has a chance to really do some good things. I mean, right now, with one game, that rookie class has looked real good.
Yeah, no kidding. You know, I was really impressed when I watched the preseason game, man. Just watching Dixon do that drop kick punt was just crazy. I've never seen anything like it.
No, and this guy he's ridiculous how good he is. I mean, he's been billed as the best punter to come in the last couple of years, and I think those billings all look to be pretty good.
Yeah, hopefully the same thing doesn't happen with the Vikings.
Yeah, well, let's hope not, but you know, we'll see. But in the end, I think that it's going to be kind of a fun year.
Yeah, no kidding. It's just a lot of unknown. I'm looking forward to it.
But let's put it this way. There was a lot of unknown. There still remains to be a lot of unknown. But the encouraging thing is that, you know, you look and you say, whoa, wait a second here. This rookie class, they're encouraging.
Yeah, no kidding. Thanks for taking my call, John.
All right, hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Jason in Puyallup. Hey, Jason.
Hey, John.
Hey, how we doing?
I had a question about the Mariners' kind of future moving forward. Wouldn't it be a good idea with so many guys under contract for the next 2-3 years to possibly give Cruz the qualifying offer at, you know, $14, $15 million?
Mm-hmm.
And then in the next 2-3 years, maybe do their best to work on the farm system and stuff. Because next year, with so many guys under contract, primarily on the offense, do they have the money to go out and get a frontline starter at $12-13 million
a year? I don't think they will be able to do that. I mean, it's so hard to do. I mean, when you realize the way free agency has changed, it's you know, it's hard to be able to get those pitchers. And that's why if you're going to be Jerry DePoto, you kind of do what you did last year. See if you can pluck a pitcher, you know, in this non-waiver trade deadline and see if you can get. Remember, they tried to get three starters out of that group, and it looked like they succeeded. They got Mike Leake. They were able to go ahead and, you know, get Marco Gonzalez, and they got Erasmo Ramirez. And so knowing that there's going to be some higher-priced pitchers that you can maybe pick up cheap in a trade and be able to have some of that salary, I think it would be better serving to do that than to put up. I mean, they can't go with Felix Hernandez making 27 and try to think that they can get a 20-some million-dollar pitcher. I think that, you know, you find which ones that might be given away on the cheap, and then you try to do something like that, I think.
What about the idea of possibly, though, just switching gears back to the offense to maybe giving Cruz qualified?
I'm with you on that.
1 year.
Yeah, I think that they really do need to get something done with Cruz. You know, whether it's a 2-year deal, because I mean, I look at it the same way as Texas with Adrian Beltre and Boston with David Ortiz. And so what you're talking about is, you know, maybe a 1 year and an option deal. He'll try to hold out for a 2-year deal. It'll be between $14 and $16 million. And so, you know, looking at the comparables, that to me makes the most sense.
Gotcha. Okay, I appreciate it. Thanks, John.
Hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to James in Olympia. Hey, James.
Hey, John. I want to see what you think about the Chargers next season.
I like them, although I still get concerned about the injuries. That concerns me because they tend to be among the league leaders in the last 2 years, and they've already lost two starters. But I think they're going to be good on defense. They've got Phillip Rivers on offense. They've got Melvin Gordon. They've got Keenan Allen. You know, I still think that they need to get one more tight end. But I like that team. I think that they've won 9 out of their last 12, and I'm picking a team to win the AFC West. I'm picking the Chargers.
Yeah, and my dad is wanting to know who you think is going to get the Seahawks wide receivers. We already know.
Yeah, I mean, they still have to play that out, and I think it depending on whether they keep 5 or 6, but safe to say the top 3, and, you know, he looked the part, Jaron Brown, he looks pretty good, so it's going to be Baldwin. It'll be Lockett. It'll be Brown. It'll be Brandon Marshall. I still think Amari Darbo can make it. And then, you know, is it going to be, you know, the battle between David Moore? If they go 6, you know, it could be Marcus Johnson. So I think that's the way it's going to go. But I think that's kind of the order it is right now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Hey,
James, thank you very much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Commando Dave. David, how are you?
Hey, what's up, John Clayton?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Yeah, well, this week, instead of roaming the secondary at Seahawks camp like 29 Tigers, Earl Thomas was at home playing Madden. Mm-hmm. The team was demoted to Jack of Hearts, and we were all reminded there are 3 more fake football games before getting to the 16 that counts. So needless to say, John Clayton, I'm in a surly mood. So right off the bat, Gamble Sands is whack. Its GM is no gentleman. And Undangerous Earl is a punk. And speaking of little bees and limp bees, let me give a shout-out to Men's Universal Clinic. If more men around town are smiling, it's because Husky football is 3 weeks away and the dogs are highly ranked. Believe me, there's more wood in that than Woody on Cheers. Let me clue you into something. When it comes to pumping new blood into an ineffectual team of members and getting it to stand up high enough for the nation to take notice, Dr. Eric Hockey can't hold Coach Peterson's clipboard. And like Rich said, John Clayton, let's go Husky. Because, you know, if the Dogs had 4 preseason games, they would be opening the season against BYU, but that's the beauty of college football. Strap them up and start playing. And there's nothing more exciting, John Clayton, than the Huskies starting off on the road in the SEC with a Chris Peterson coach team that had the conference top team by the shorties 2 years ago in the playoffs and would take down the Mississippi Bulldogs any day and win, lose, or draw. Now that we're in the college playoff era, John Clayton, I think you agree with this. The Huskies have the type of season opener, and actually more to the point, the type of schedule that all major conference teams should play. And for the Dogs, the only light beer game on the schedule is North Dakota State at Husky Stadium. And as far as the biggest opener in college football this season, ABC owns ESPN Game Day. Game Day is on ESPN, and the Huskies-Auburn game is on ABC for any Irish Minkies asking, you know, what I think about it. You know what I'm saying, John Clayton?
Right. Agreed.
Yeah. The one thing I will get to, the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, that he keeps making a very valid point about not being in the conference. They do play everybody, but the problem is, not being outside of a conference, you're not going to be, you know, in the college playoff, put it that way, right?
Right.
All I can say now, go Dogs. Talk to you next week, John Clayton.
All right, sounds good. Commando Dave, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Take a break and come back and get those last round of calls. So load them up. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
And our thanks for Matt Nelson for producing the show. Our thanks to Matt Nelson for running the show. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Rick in Twin Lakes. Hey, Rick.
Oh, good morning, John.
Good morning.
Yeah, I too was impressed with the rookie class that we have for this year. Of course, the national pundits didn't think too much of what we were doing, but, you know, that's not the first time. That's
yeah,
happened.
I mean, they got Fs and it's like, well,
yeah, that's
I
not
think
the first time that happened, you know. But I was impressed with the wide receivers, the depth that we have at wide receivers.
Because
we're going to be going against L.A. Rams. That seems to be the chief competition.
That's correct.
In our division. We know that Peters is good. We know that Tlaib is good. But they're only two guys.
Right.
Can they scare? They can stop two guys, but can they stop four guys? I don't know how good they are at their defensive backs. So we need to make sure we have the best wide receivers available. I was impressed with the run game. Mr. Fluker, I'd rather get that guy drunk than to feed him. He is one big guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was putting some guys down. And, of course, and on the flip side, Mr. Fetty, he was in there with the second stringers. And, of course, everybody made their blocks except for him. It was a run to the right.
Right.
He was pass blocking. Everybody else was drive blocking. Freddie was still at the line of scrimmage as if he was pass blocking or something.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the guy that he was attempting to block is the one that made the tackle. So, I don't know. I think we were Seahawks the type of team that they will admit their mistakes and cut their losses. And that's the way it seems to be going right now with Mr. Fetty. Who knows? Maybe the light will come on and he'll get it. But right now, it doesn't appear to be so. Like I said, I have high hopes for this team. I think they will be competitive, and I'm looking forward to the season.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a fun year. I really do.
Yeah, me too. I'll enjoy the ride. I mean, the rookies, may not be a playoff team right now with the young guys and the new people we got, but by the time the end of the year rolls around, we'll be fine. Why? Because of the coaching.
That's it.
As you know, and most of the good football fans know, it's a coach's league. Belichick. I mean, Pete Carroll. The guys, the coaches that they brought in. I mean, the L.A. coach they brought in. The young guy got those guys rolling. If you have a good program, they teach the fundamentals, and you stick with your philosophy, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
No Jimmy Grahams. And no Percy Harvins. We don't need to go for the race cars. We need to go for the heavy duty 4x4 trucks. That's what
true.
We are.
Good point.
Yeah.
I like it.
Hey, go Hawks.
All right, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Steve in Burien. Hey, Steve.
Yeah, hey John. Regarding baseball, for one thing, I'd like to see him change the rules so the pass ball, wild pitch, is live ball for the batter too. Because why is it that everybody else can take off and run except for the batter? I mean, you make an aggressive move towards first base, that means you have to go. I think it'd be more exciting, add a little bit more excitement to the game. And what's driving me crazy with this team is I've seen it three, maybe four times now. We have men on first and second, nobody out, and say Cruz is coming up to bat or somebody's coming up to bat. I don't care who it is. In a tight game, you've got two men on like that, you sacrifice. I've seen Cruz pop out once in that situation. I've seen Seager hit into a double play in that situation. I can't remember the other one. But I don't care who it is. You got, two men on, first and second, nobody out. Put down the bunt, lay down the sacrifice. Because on all those times, wound up coming away with nothing. No runs, lost the game because of that. They didn't do that one game.
Well, that's a bad idea. I mean, again,
do they expect the guy like Cruz to come up and hit a home run or a double or something like that? Hopefully, instead of having him lay it down, leave it up to Seager or whoever the next batter is to drive it in from second and third with one out.
I don't think I want to see Cruz running. That was that's one thing. He can't run.
No, but I don't care. Just lay down the butt. He didn't have to run to first base. Just lay down the butt and jog down there or whatever. But at least you're moving the runners up and not. It just drives me crazy. I'm sure I'm going to see it again and again this year.
Oh, yeah.
It drives me, makes me nuts.
That is interesting. Hey, but thank you. Interesting. Thank you for the phone call. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Rusty in Lake Forest Park. Hey, Rusty.
Hi, John. Big fan. Also a big 70s funk fan, too. So
oh, great. What's your favorite groups? That.
Oh, God, I have so many of them. I'm a big Parliament Funkadelic guy.
Yeah, makes my funks a P-funk, so I can get funk stuff.
They're bomb.
Yeah. Anyway, I mean, also, on the lighter side, I still favor, again, I'm a James Brown guy. Certainly, you go to the Dayton, Ohio groups that are all there that were all fantastic. I mean, but then still hard to talk JB. JB's the best.
Well, he kind of invented the medium almost, him and Sly Stone, as far as I'm concerned, you know. Anyway, the question I wanted to ask about football was, I noticed that a few of our guys stayed in the locker room for the national anthem this
right,
time.
Right, Dwayne Brown and I think two others.
Yeah, and that's all fine and good, and I think they're taking your solution a little bit at a time. But, you know, for me, it's just unfortunate that so many people, including a certain member of the presidency I won't mention, don't get the whole purpose behind it. They think it's they're desecrating the flag or something, when the truth of the matter is they're trying to make a point about you know, racial inequality. And, you know, I don't know what to say about that. It's just unfortunate.
It is, because it's a problem that needs to go away, and the league won't do it. I mean, the league won't take the position. It's like, just go back to the old way. And it's like, oh, no, we want to have it. And right now it's just all confused and a mess and not good. And, you know, it's just terrible. And that's why it's up to the league to be able to figure something out and figure it out fast.
Well, I think your plan is the way to go, and just calm it down and let them make their point some other way. Guys like Doug Baldwin are smart guys, and they're going to work on this problem and find good ways to do it, you know. But
say what you want. It's like you don't like. I mean, at least in these first week of the preseason, they've been pretty. I mean, they've been professional about it. I mean, you may debate and not like what they've done, but you know, they've not tried to embarrass the league and all this stuff. But still, the league needs to make this go away. Hey, thank you for the phone call, and thank everybody for being with us today. Of course, we'll be back next week at 9, and I'll be back Monday at 10. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.